So, Simeon, I wonder if you could begin by telling me about your childhood, what your parents did, siblings, that kind of thing.
Yes, I was born in Henley-on-Thames as a war victory baby in the middle of 1946. So I'm a celebration babe. My father served for 6 years in the war, and after the war, he went into business with his brother as a minor building and decorating firm. And my mother, who was in service before the war, came from Wales, a mining family.
Whereabouts in Wales?
South Wales, in the Llynvi Valley, north of Maesteg,
Hmm.
in a little village called Caerdydd.
Okay.
And her father was a Barnardo's orphan, who after the war went to, after his service in the army at the end and the turn of the 19th, 20th century, went to South Wales. To the mines there. That's where he met a Welsh woman and settled there. So,
Okay, I grew up in Swansea.
oh, in Swansea,
Family from Edinburgh, but they moved.
Aberdawi.
To Swansea, so I'm a Celtic.
Ah,
Well,
yes.
Celtic crossbreed, I suppose.
Yes, well, I've got the Celtic blood in me as well,
Yeah,
you see.
yeah.
We've got Irish, Welsh, British, English, no Scots as far as we know, so.
I only have Scottish and Welsh. My accent goes all over the place. Brothers and
Yeah,
sisters?
one sister, 3 years younger than me,
Yeah.
who lives in Henley-on-Thames. She's not married, and at the present she is dying with terminal cancer
Oh, I'm
at
sorry.
as we speak. But I mean, she's maintaining life at the moment, but she is under hospice care.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And growing up, were you a church attending family?
Yes, my mother was had always been church attending. My father hadn't, and we did go to church with mum, and but when it was time to be confirmed, my father was went to classes as well, and we were confirmed together, and he was baptized 1 week before me,
Is
before
that
we were
Church
confirmed.
of England or?
Church of England, yeah.
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 And that was, where was the church?
Henley-on-Thames,
In.
Holy Trinity,
Okay.
Henley-on-Thames.
Okay. And is your faith important to you?
I think it always was,
Yeah.
yes. I seem to have been a rather precocious religious brat when I was little.
Okay.
And I was in the choir, I served, and yes, so life went on like that, yeah. I
Yeah.
maintained my faith.
Yeah. Was it a happy childhood?
Very, yes, very warm, loving family life we had.
Okay.
I look backward on it with great joy and happiness, really.
That's good to hear. Boys, girls, who were you attracted to?
Oh, from quite an early age, I think boys. Well,
Yeah.
yeah, same sex, really.
At what
Didn't know
point?
was quite what was going on because
Yeah.
everybody else seemed to be attracted to something different from me. But
Yeah.
from a very early age, I would say about 9, 10, I think I knew I was going to be different from my peers of the male sex.
Yeah. Did you have a name for it in your head? Were you aware of the
No, I
word?
don't think I did, and I think I was rather worried about it, really. One, perhaps a little bit older than that, but you know, because I didn't seem to be going down the normal route of relationships.
Was it mentioned ever mentioned at church when you were growing up, homosexuality?
I don't recall it at all.
Yeah.
Don't recall the subject being broached at all. Even in confirmation class, which my father came to some, we went to the adult one as well, but they came to us. I mean, the norm was to, you know, for married people, male, female, to have a nice family life and have children, etc. And that seemed, I don't recall any other options being mentioned at all.
Okay. So when was your first experience with another boy? Just romantic per se, not necessarily full-on sexual encounter.
I think that must have been when I was, I would say 17.
Hmm. And did you come out as such to your family?
No,
or?
No. There was a lot of guilt around having. One was growing up, and when I say 17, it was interesting because that was 1963 and the papers were full. And I, you know, for the life of me, I've lost his name, but there had been an exposure of a diplomat in America,
yes,
in Russia.
And they had
taken photographs of in the Russians, and he'd given details away, you know, secrets away. And I mean, spent a long time in prison. I can't, for the life of me, get his name. That was all very negative of that at that time, you know.
Was it Guy?
No, it wasn't him. No, he was one of the four, wasn't he?
But
I wish I could remember his name. But at that time, it was all in the news and over the papers how terrible these queer people were. You see.
Yeah, we're fine.
Are we all right?
Yeah, I was just checking. It was recording fine, but it is. Yeah, so you kept it all to yourself?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Okay. Did you feel a sense of conflict between your sexuality and your faith?
I think I did at that time. I wondered, and we'd better do something about this. Mm. So the only way to do it was keep it under wraps and tuck it all away, really. So I joined a religious order.
Okay.
Which was the worst thing to do in one sense.
And which order was that?
They were Franciscans.
Mm-hmm.
The Society of St. Francis, Anglican Franciscans. And I joined when I was, well, I explored it in when I was 18, 19.
Mm.
And actually joined when I was 20. So, and for 20 years I was in, as a friar, Franciscan friar.
20 years?
Yeah, I left when I was 40.
Okay. And did you suppress your sexuality?
Yes, more or less, yes. Occasional flutters and sort of emotional involvements, but nothing to really to, you know, beyond that. Feelings more than actual physical contact.
Did it make you ill in a sense?
It probably did, but I don't think I was aware of it. Ill. I mean, it was a gradual realization over those years that I'm not going to be able to continue this until the day I die, which is what I promised when I made my life vows. But I think that was a gradual process.
Mm.
And, yeah.
Okay, so what year was that then when you left?
1986. So I joined in 1966.
Yeah.
And I left in 1986.
Okay.
I'd spent half my life in a religious order by then. I was 40.
Oh, gosh. The whole thought of that just fills me with all sorts of negative emotions.
Does it? Yeah.
So what... Talk me about the end bit of that. What was the one final thing that pushed you?
Yes, I did during that last year. I met somebody that I really felt very close to, and wanted to pursue that. And it came to a crunch that I didn't think I could continue really living a celibate or trying to live a celibate life for another 40 years.
Yeah.
So,
And how do you have that conversation when you leave the orders? Did you just say, I've met a nice chap and I...
Yeah, I was quite honest. I said, I don't think I'm going to be able to fulfil these vows I've taken 13 years ago. I think I've moved on in my life and my personhood.
Yeah.
And more accepting, I think. Things were beginning to open up a bit. Not very much at that time, but things were changing and there was the possibility to talk more about how one's inner self, really, you know. Yeah. And so with talking to people and coming to the conclusion that it was probably best now to go rather than risk being a liability to the order.
Yeah.
And doing something silly or becoming a nasty piece of work who's so bitter and twisted, which one did see in some elderly brethren who were cold and had died many years before, but continued to live an unfulfilled existence, really.
Yeah. So what happens next?
After that?
Yeah.
Well, I'd been ordained in my while I was a brother. I was ordained a priest in 1979, so this is 1986, and so that ministry was expressed within the community, within the society.
Mm.
So I was told where to go.
Okay.
But at that point, of course, on the decision to come out of the order, which coincided really with coming out as was possible, I felt possible at that time in 86, because there were other things that started happening then. But I wrote to the Bishop of Birmingham and said, look, I really want to leave. I can't continue. Have you got any work for me in your diocese? I was in Edinburgh at the time, in Pilton, North Edinburgh, and my parents were in Oxfordshire, so I thought Birmingham would be a good, reasonable distance from them, and yet close enough to care for them should they need me. Edinburgh's a long way away, which I find Durham my sister at the moment, so, you know, so anyway, he gave me a job. But I was interested in deaf people because of an experience that I'd had when I was in Edinburgh, and I then worked with deaf people.
Deaf
people who use sign language. So
okay.
I learnt sign language and spent the rest of my working ministry with deaf people till I retired. So that's what happened then.
Okay.
And I did that in Birmingham. I had a brief interlude in Portsmouth in a hearing church. When you work with deaf, you call it the hearing church, you see. And then went back to it because I missed using my skills in signing, really, in Lincoln.
Okay. And you were out? Out in your sexuality?
Out in the sense that I met somebody and we lived together. And it was not broadcast at all. It was the time, I don't know whether the name Tony Higdon means anything to you.
Stephen mentioned it,
1987.
Yeah.
He ramroded the General Synod to issue a ultimatum to all these peculiar people that they weren't really very nice, and so we got a lot of negativity at that time.
Yeah.
And so it was not an easy period. You couldn't be really honest with people who you were responsible to, like the Bishop of Birmingham and those that had the power, because I had no rights as such as an incumbent of a parish or anything. I was purely on a contract in the job I was doing.
Okay.
which happened for all my working life after I said, after the Franciscans.
Yeah.
I've never had a living, but some vicars do, where you get the freehold, where you get security
yeah.
of tenure, and you've really got to have blotted your copybook to be thrown out.
Mm.
So it, you know, it may have been difficult for me to get another job if people had not
yeah.
wanted to employ me. So okay. there were those difficulties, there were those things going around in the church at that time, that lot of negativity, a lot of nasty comments being made to about certain people.
Okay. How did the AIDS crisis fit in with that? Because that's a few years.
That was coming up. Yeah, that was that had started while I was in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And while I was there, I did some buddying mm-hmm. in Edinburgh. With the knowledge of the Bishop of Edinburgh at that time, who was very supportive of work with people with AIDS,
mm.
which was very good. And I continued that in Birmingham as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all these things, because that compounded the Higton thing, really, that mm. these wicked people, this is God having his own back on, you know, you've heard all this before. I expect, you know, the judgment of God on...
Yeah, I grew up with it. I was about 17 when all the horrible adverts were on TV with tombstones and the...
Oh, yes.
And I know that my mother said it was a divine judgment from God, and I said, well, he spared the lesbians. And my mum didn't know what to say to that. So, I'm very aware of it. I was probably too young to be fully aware of it, but... I certainly remember it, that being freaked out and frightened by the adverts.
Isn't that interesting you say that? Because that, you see, that came, those, the leaflets came through every letterbox in the United Kingdom.
Mm.
I think 86, 87.
Yeah, we got them through the door. Because
yes.
we used to get rabies ones through
That's
the door.
Right.
And it was very similar, these kind of scary, this
and
is what
And on
to
the
do.
Front of the AIDS one was Don't Die of Ignorance,
mm.
with all these great stones and
mm.
tombstones and...
Mm.
And at the Centre for Deaf People in Birmingham, where I was chaplain in the diocese, and based at that centre, along with the social workers, interpreters and everybody else, I used to do my turn of, I wasn't a trained social worker, but seeing deaf people who might need help filling in forms and that, when I was in the centre. And I do remember very early on while I was doing that, and very... bad at signing at that time, this young lad who came in absolutely petrified with this leaflet, and he had no speech particularly, you know, it was very deaf, it was profoundly deaf, and
yeah.
there was hardly speech, but he was petrified because what it said on the front, don't die of ignorance.
Mm.
Because at deaf school, the teachers had called him an ignorant bastard.
Ah, oh, so he thought he was next in line. How awful.
And he knew the word ignorant.
Yeah.
Ignorance. And he thought he was going to die because he was ignorant.
Yeah.
Because his teachers had told him. You know, lovely education, isn't it?
Yeah,
the dominant language group again,
yeah.
suppressing,
yeah.
you know, a minority.
Mm.
So that really shook me,
yeah.
that this poor, and, you know, I was determined more and more then to get sign language under my belt
mm.
in order to be able to perhaps be of use to people, this minority group within a minority group, deaf gay people, you know.
Yeah.
And so I did that and got involved with
mm.
The Rainbow Group that the deaf organised nationally
mm.
For deaf gay people, you know.
Mm.
So it became supportive of deaf gay people in that context.
Yeah. Have you been involved in a sort of activist work at all for LGBT rights?
I'm trying to think. No, I'm rather lazy when it comes to that. I like it to come to my door rather than, you know, that's the nature of the beast that I am, really, in a sense. Sorry?
In Durham.
In Durham. No, all I do remember was going to the 20th anniversary bash service in St Martin in the Fields in the 90s. Well, I can't remember when it was actually founded now. But our
LGCM.
Yeah, it was GCM when it was founded.
Yeah, 1976.
So it would have been 1996.
Yeah.
There was a in St Martin in the Fields, there were postcards published of that event, and Muggins here is my mugshot is right in the middle of a postcard that was produced.
Okay.
But no, I haven't been that. I've been on couple of pride marches in a dog collar when I was around.
Yeah.
And I did the World AIDS Day, helped at that commemoration in Birmingham City Centre and in part of the service, and got the cathedral to open its doors at night to allow this motley group of people carrying candles in to dirty the cathedral floor, and and they were very good at that, very welcoming. It was good dean, good chapter, who were very open and welcoming there.
Yeah.
But that's really the limit, not much more than that. Being available, doing what I can, but I'm not much of a placard carrier, you know.
Yeah, I'm not either. And when did you meet Stephen?
I was now, after Birmingham, I went briefly to Portsmouth.
Yeah.
And then
and that was enough. I'm from Southampton. Yes, we're very, very rude about Portsmouth.
I loved Portsmouth. I really did love Portsmouth. I enjoyed living there. But I realised about a week in after I'd gotten, I didn't want much responsibility. I wanted a breather within just a different sphere of work. But very soon I realised I'd made a mistake.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy. And the vicar then, nice as ninepence before I came, but as soon as I got there, I saw his true colours, and especially his attitude to gay people, and thought, I'm not going to put up with this. So after about a month or two, I started looking for, I thought, I'll go back to deaf ministry. Well, I really loved it. And so I moved on to Lincoln after 18 months, actually. And that's a huge area, in the Diocese of Lincoln. Lincolnshire is a big, big county. So I lived in Lincoln, but I had congregations 45 miles away in different directions. I had 8 worshipping groups of deaf people. And all that entails with all that travel, you know. So, but Stephen and I went to a day organised by by the bishop, because my arrival and the bishop's arrival was within a month or two, and very open bishop we had at Lincoln when we were there. And he said, look, I've got all these queers in the diocese. And he said, nothing's being done for them. I'm a trustee of Changing Attitude, and we haven't got a branch in the diocese.
Was he straight or?
Oh, he was straight as a die. But such an open, warm, John Saxby, his name was. And he was bishop for 10 years. He retired before I retired. But our period in Lincoln was co-terminus, really, you see. And we got round the huge dining room table, all these gay people that he knew of in the diocese. He invited us all by name, you know.
And, it's been like one long dating session.
But it was lovely to be and to have a bishop that you could actually sit down. He said, everything's confidential here, you say what you like, you know. Wow. And that was so refreshing.
Yeah.
And so, I'm that's too hasty. I've got to go back because that wasn't the first time. I met Stephen the first time, which he's probably said, I beg your pardon, Bishop Doe of Swindon, the suffragan of the diocese, I think, of Salisbury, came to talk to his book. You know, it's terrible getting old. I can never remember it. We've got it on the bookshelf there. But it was about homosexuality in the church. And he spoke to this book and led this day for us. And Stephen was one of the people. It was one of the things put on by the diocese, and this was about homosexuality, you see. So with somebody who'd written a book, a bishop who'd written a book about it, very positive, very affirming.
John Doe.
Doe, Bishop Doe, what was his first name?
Oh. How do you spell Doe?
D-O-E.
As in, I can look it up.
Doe O'Dea sort of thing, you know. Bishop of Swindon he was. He became chair or head or whatever they call it of the United Society for the Propagation of the Gospel, a missionary society after that. But he's now, I've noticed, one of the signatories on the letter to the archbishops. Yes, Bishop Doe is one of the people. So he's on there, as I've just signed it as well, while I went in there.
Yeah, Tracy's email, I need to do it.
And
I had to read it to approve Tracy's signing it, but I haven't actually signed it yet.
Oh, right,
so
yeah.
I will do.
There's nearly 4,000 now.
Oh, good.
So it's quite good. And it's interesting to go through the list. I've just gone through the list very quickly, all 4,000 names.
Oh, God.
You know, scanning it as I go and seeing. It's always good to see who's signing these things, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the first time that I met Stephen.
Mm.
And I saw him across a crowded room of about 50 people and I thought, now he looks rather nice.
Mm. Did you go up to him? Yes.
And I said, look, this is me. I gave him an ABLE label with my name and address on. Yeah. I said, when you're up in Lincoln, because he came from the border of Cambridgeshire and Norfolk, way down south, 50 miles from Lincoln. But when you're up, I said, go out for a coffee or a drink or something, or a meal even, you know. Well, he never did. He never did. And the next time was when the bishop had called this meeting.
Yeah.
And that's when I said, you never contacted me. This was about a year later, you see. Because the funny thing is that when we're about three, did he tell you this about 3 years ago? We said, we must have known. We must have. When did we first meet? We got that, you know. And he said, he got it, his diary out, and said, it's 2002 there. But couldn't remember the date when this meeting with Bishop Doe, you see.
Yeah.
So we emailed Bishop Doe and said, when were you in Lincoln talking to your book? Because Stephen and myself met at your talk, you see. And we think it's about 10 years ago, whenever it was.
Yeah.
And he emailed back immediately and said, I've got my diary for that year open, and it was, no, it's terrible, it's April sometime. You know, my memory, you know. And he said, so you've missed your 10th anniversary.
Oh.
But congratulations. Sorry, I've diverted there.
Oh, no, it's funny.
So that's where we met, and and as they say, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah. So you had your civil partnership.
Yes, with the support of the Bishop of Lincoln, who apologised for not being able to be present because there was a meeting of the House of Bishops of the Church of England.
Yeah.
And he said, can you imagine what the Bishop of Winchester would say if I said to him, I can't come whenever it was.
Was that Michael Scott joined at the time?
Yes, very, very. I was with my aunt and my mother in Winchester, walking near the cathedral, and he was coming down the road.
Mm.
And I thought, I'm not going to have to say something. don't want to sort of spit in his face, but I'm going to have to say something because he's been so negative. And as he came up, he smiled very nicely and I said, homophobe.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh,
I couldn't stop it.
I wish I'd been an ant on the ground.
I wasn't in a dog collar or anything. So he didn't know.
He didn't know who you were?
No, he didn't know who I was. And he was, I must admit, he did have a lovely smile. And these two old ladies I had either side, my aunt and her, my mother and her sister, you know. And
was he walking around with a purple dress on?
Well, not the dress. He had his purple stock and a suit.
Enormous.
With a nice bit of gold.
Yeah, a bit of bling.
And, yeah, sorry.
This
is all being recorded, you see.
We're not submitting. I don't have to. I can prick sound bites out for the point of quotes.
Yeah.
But we have to put the full transcription in the archive.
That's fair enough. I don't mind. The poor man's dead now anyway. He's gone. But I was surprised myself when I saw him and had heard his attitudes. I just couldn't stop saying it. I thought I'd just go.
So, I mean, I live in the Diocese of Winchester.
Yes.
It's not significantly better.
At the moment, the Heaton Dakin is not being very nice to people like Jeremy.
Yes, was that Davis?
Jeremy Davis, the canon at Salisbury, that was. And his opera singer partner. Or husband, I think. They're married,
they got married. What's your take on the Church of England? Do you see it lasting?
I think Christianity will last. Whether the incarnation within the Church of England will last, I'm not quite sure. But it probably will, because whatever one says about it, the very fact that we can have this conversation, whereas in the Roman Church they are frightened silly of people knowing where they stand on things. I mean, you know, it may be messy, and it certainly is messy, but at least we have a voice and can, and which we found, I mean, 30 years ago it was a bit different, but there is, among people, there is a confidence to be able to, if you like, come out publicly and say, you know, like this letter. That wouldn't have been possible 30 years ago. And it is not possible in many communions of the Christian churches. You know, there's just not that. So, the dear old C of E is not stupid, really, by cricket bats and iron balls, but I mean, goodness me, it's quite an amazing thing. If you want to believe in God, the Holy Spirit, just look at the Church of England, because it would never have, except for the Holy Spirit, I mean, it wouldn't be there, because it just doesn't work on paper. Doesn't work at the best of times, would it?
Personally experienced prejudice, homophobic prejudice, and if so, what form did it take?
I personally haven't. I mean, I know it exists, of course, and if you like, that I've been on the receiving end, but not in a direct way. I've had some really good experiences within the church, but I do know it's there, and there are two or three people I know who have removed themselves when I have been around, because I know that they probably can't cope with having a great big poof doing things. So, but it's not been a direct thing. I'm in one sense I'm fortunate in that I haven't had to cope with direct homophobia, really.
Neither does Oscar.
No. Bless you.
What do you do at the moment? I mean, talk about your life these days.
Well, there we are. I'm in my dotage, really. I'm sort of here with Stephen. We came up here because neither of us has got much roots, home roots at all. I mean, I've just got a sister who's not married or have any children. He has a non-relationship with his sister, really. Was never part of her family. I mean, she just doesn't want to know. And although he's still got cousins and that, there isn't that relationship that wants one, that draws you to be down near a family as such. So we thought, let's go somewhere completely different ourselves. Well, so that's why we're up here. We both like the northeast and came up, well, it would be 5 years this summer, full time, living up here. Sorry, what was the actual question?
No, I'm just curious. Are you involved with in church? I know that Stephen is still practicing his reader.
Oh yes, he is. Well, I help out in parishes where they need cover. Otherwise, I'm attached to the local parish where I go to church, even if I'm not doing anything. And but at the moment, because of my sister's health.
Yeah.
And the need to go down there once a month for 10 days or so, and not knowing how she's going to be.
Yeah, things are kind of on hold a bit.
Yeah, they are. I don't commit myself at the moment to anything up here because I don't want to say I'll do that in 3 weeks' time and find out I've got to go down and try and find somebody to cover me when I've been asked to cover, you see. So that's how I'm doing it at the moment. But so it's a helping out capacity, really, being available for holidays, cover, vacancies, ill health.
So what are the major changes you've experienced in your lifetime so far? What things in society have changed?
Well, what one has noticed over the years, I think, is that in changes in society, is how different it is from when one was growing up, in the sense of, for want of a better word, I think, respect. I suppose that may come from also coming from that period of knowing your place within society. And all that has gone, in one sense. I mean, it's a far more open society for people. It's things that happen now would never have happened then. So the whole openness of society is something I sometimes think about, you know. Like that when I was young, you know. The opportunities that people have now. I mean, I was in one sense factory fodder when I was little, you know. I mean, there was no chance of me going to university, really. You know, you came from a working class background. I mean, it was going to university. It wasn't even heard of within the family, you know. Education was still 11 plus, creaming off the bright, which I failed, in spite of always being one or first or second in the class, and somebody 10 down from me, who was always middling in the class, failed, but her parents, how they do it, I don't know. But she went to grammar school.
Put money under the table,
See? And I thought, why didn't my mum and dad go and stick up for me? But it wasn't part of what they would have done. This is how things are, and that's society. That's, you know your place in one sense. So I did go, 2 years later, I managed to do an exam to get, because once you were in the secondary modern system, that was it. I mean, you were churned out for shop assistants, hairdressing, factories. That was... But 2 years later, at the age of 13, I managed to pass an exam which got me to a school in Reading, which actually did GCEs. And so I did, I managed to get there and did get GCEs and everything, which was, but even then, university seemed to be, wasn't a thing you really thought of from my background.
Yeah.
And I, that's a wonderful thing to see now, the educational possibilities for young people, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So those sort of things, I think, in society, and also with the acceptance of difference as well. I think back in the 50s and 60s, if you were different, yeah, you didn't want to be different. You wanted to conform, and that's all part of that, knowing your place as well and being part of society. And
I mean, I have two teenagers and they just don't get at all why there's an issue with LGBT things in the church.
No.
Totally nonplussed.
Yes, yeah.
They almost don't believe that I'm doing this project and why there's a point to it. So that's, I mean, obviously I'm a bit younger than you, but I grew up in the 80s, really, was my, being a teenager was all in the 80s.
Yeah.
And you didn't talk about it.
No, no.
I mean, I certainly, I identified bi, I certainly did not talk about it, and it was frightening and it was scary then.
Yeah.
So, to me, things really, for me, it's only, I think, the last 10 years that things have, it feels a lot different. So
yes, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think the future is bright for LGBT people of faith on the whole?
This meeting in Canterbury at the moment, this polarity between these two warring factions is interesting, because I went to Zambia to work, because I trained as a nurse as well when I was a brother, and went around a leprosarium and health centre in the bush in Zambia. And although that church, that province, isn't as vocal as some others like Nigeria, Uganda, Sudan and others, I mean, the place of homicide, we knew a white farmer on the farm block where we were who had had an affair with a black person and was actually caught and imprisoned for 12 years when I was there. A relationship with a black man. So, yes, there would be, but I don't, it, in a church which is trying to stay together, with the Western part of the church, for want of a better term, the white, American-dominated, English-dominated, European-dominated. I think there's going to have to be some sort of break, because I don't think we're going to have... The Church of England tries to live with two different integrities for all its life, like women priests and those who oppose them, and that they're both equally valid. I think this meeting in Canterbury is going to show that probably these two integrities of inclusiveness and exclusiveness in the southern black area are not going to be able to be reconciled.
Yes.
and that there will be some sort of shift to loosening the links between the provinces, those who want to include people, gay people, and those who want to, what they say, go back to biblical standards, stoning people and divorcing women by just saying, I divorce, you get out of it. You know, I mean, if...
That, women in tents for a week during their period, altogether. Yeah.
It's that tribal sort of understanding of faith which you see in the Old Testament, which is prevalent in non-Western cultures. Tribalism is very strong. And, you know, I don't think there can be much relationship between the two. Well,
you see a divorce of
there's going to be, as I think can well be said, wasn't it, you can remain family, but some families don't talk to each other, some members of the family don't talk to each other, but you're never not a member of the family.
Okay.
I mean, Stephen and his sister's case in point. They are family, but they're not family, you know. There's no relationship between them, but they're blood relatives. And I, looking at it in that way, I can't see. I think after this meeting, and where the true colours are then laid out, I think there's going to have to be some understanding that there's going to be whether you call it a split or a movement away from, and that will free the Western church, I think. I don't like using terms like progressive and everything, but those who are trying to be more inclusive of people than people who want to use a book to knock them over the head. You know, to condemn people. There it does stand a chance if that happens, but that will be at the detriment of gay people within the tribal churches, because they will have no voice, and that would be a bad thing. So trying to stay together is the best option for the sake of those who live under oppressive regimes, supported by an oppressive church, you know, like Uganda, that agreeing with 15 years imprisonment for, you know, I mean, the Archbishop of Uganda, I have nothing in common with that. But for the sake of the people who are living under that system, I can perhaps, and we can, in this freer society, be a voice for them on the world stage. Because isn't that in the Commonwealth? Well, we got 50 odd countries in the Commonwealth, and 40 of them still have oppressive legislation, which we exported with the Empire. And we've moved on. But they're still stuck, and it's reinforced by this tribal literal understanding of a book, which doesn't wash with us in the West anymore, really.
It's the aspects of the Commonwealth that the Queen never mentions on Christmas Day.
Absolutely, God bless her, and she tries her best, but absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Just to close, if someone had to describe you in three words, what would those three words be? You can say anything you like.
Flabby, wishy-washy, and...
wishy-washy with a hyphen. Yeah, that's one word. I'll let you off.
Is it? A third word. Okay.
Okay.
I think I'm okay.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
But the flabby and the wishy-washy and somebody who doesn't really want like confrontation particularly, even though I did shout homophobe to a bishop. But,
that's pretty heroic actually.
I didn't wait for the answer. Aunt and mum on either.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. There, Oscar, that's all.